All right. Everyone can hear me? Super. So now we're officially going to get started. It's going to be a little confusing. Okay, so nice to be back in person. Hey, everyone. We're going to talk about Makif and Nikaf today. Start fresh with a new Sigya. And let's just get started by reading the Mishnah, and then we'll jump into conceptually what are the underlying principles that explain the dinim at work here. So, volunteer from somebody here in the room. Josh, you want to get us started?
So, there's one guy that has like three fields that are kind of surrounding another guy's and builds three walls around it. So, the guy that got surrounded doesn't have to like chip in.
Okay, good. So, guy surrounds another guy on three sides. We don't exactly know what it looks like. It's a debate amongst the Rishonim. He builds a wall surrounding the properties in some way. So the guy on the inside, who is the beneficiary, is not obligated to chip in yet. Rabbi Yossi Omer. That's right. So there's an ambiguous subject here, right? Who is the one who got up and built this final wall? If that fourth wall gets built, then the guy on the inside who's benefiting from the other person's building has to chip in. From the Mishnah, it sounds like full market value, right? This is one of those Mishnayos where it gets so chewed up by the Gemara that the straightforward meaning of the Mishnah itself is almost useless, right? Until the Gemara gets through with it. So you build three walls, the inside guy doesn't have to chip in. You build the fourth, and now finally he's on the hook. So if I just asked you reading this Mishnah, what's the underlying legal principle by which the inside guy has to pay when the fourth wall is built? What would you say, Josh?
The underlying legal principle?
Yeah, like why, so you build four walls.
I'd say it's because when someone does a service that you benefit from, then you're obligated to pay for it as if you had hired
them. Okay, so one way of reading the Mishnah, and this definitely seems to be the Derech HaMelech, I would say the main way that the Rishonim understand this, is that if you are the beneficiary of a service that somebody else provides for you, you're obligated to pay. Are we all more or less in agreement that that's the underlying principle here? So you reside in the inside area. So let's say you have a field, somebody else surrounds you on all four sides, so your perimeter is surrounded. If he builds a wall that now helps you, you're on the hook to compensate him for the benefit that you receive. Everybody agree that that's the seems to be the underlying principle? Okay, so we're going to talk more about that in a moment. Let me just say right now that there are multiple different ways of instantiating or persistifying that principle itself, right? There could be a few different types of reasons why you're obligated to pay when you benefit from the service. We'll talk about what those reasons are. But for now, I think Josh is right to leave it very generally. You benefit from a service, you're obligated to pay for it. And that's what's going on here in Makif and Nikaf. Josh, you had a hand on that, or?
I don't think it's so easy to generalize like that, because only when the service is so complete that you actually surround the entire property, you're better. I don't think any service that you provide. And it's hard to say that he's not benefiting from the first three walls. I know that's kind of a discussion also.
Yeah.
That's how I qualify.
So you're a little upset. You're a little upset about how the details of the case actually cohere with that principle.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're gonna talk a lot about that, right? How is he benefiting exactly? How much is he benefiting? Is that principle just? So we'll get there. Now, I think there's one Rishon who might offer us a different theory here. But let me just say one other thing just from Rashi. You could see from Rashi here in Avdalah Amud Beis, why are you not chayev to pay for the first three walls? So could you guys see this? Is that too small still?
You can see it.
You can see it or not?
Yeah.
Yeah. Kobe, could you see it from where you are? Okay. Barely?
Well, I can see it when I need the sign.
Right. Let me see if I can get this a little bigger even. What's that? This is a little better, I think. move these guys to the side here.
Put that little like upward arrow on the top right.
What do I click?
In the Google Docs, click the upwards right out and it's a pound one. That raises up that menu. Gives me the real estate.
Oh, nice. So this is a little better? Oh, you wanted it from this one.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that better?
Big moves.
What?
It's big.
Okay. Good. So you can see Rashi here tells us, why is the inside guy not obligated to pay for the first three walls? So what does Rashi tell us, Josh?
It's only because it's not the conventional leader. It's only because this area that was fenced is in a place that really needs to fence.
That's good. So there's no Hezekiah issue. There's no independent obligation to build a wall. Right? So there's no Hezekiah obligation. There's no Shekinim obligation from what we can discern in Rashi. So there's no, all of that is non-cognizable, right? It's not a cognizable benefit because it's a makom shenagu shelo ligdor. But you agree with that? That's Rashi's reading. So what then is the benefit? So Rashi tells us here, this is not Rashi, this is the Haggah in Rashi, but that's fine. Deleka hezek re'ia, there's no issue of hezek re'ia because it's a makom shenagu shelo ligdor. So what is there, Josh?
You're trying to stop animals from getting into like trampling your crops or whatever.
Yeah, so the benefit here is in blocking animals from trespassing. That's the benefit of this wall because it blocks those trespassing animals. Zulti, you say something? Were you able to hear Josh when Josh was talking, Zulti? You're able to hear him?
Yeah, like a little bit, yeah. I was able to understand what he said.
Great. Here's a little bit able to hear. So you guys just scream if you talk up again. Okay, so that's what we get from Rashi. And I think it's pretty clear from Rashi that the thing that the guy on the inside is paying for is the benefit of not having animals trespass on his property. Does anybody disagree with that? Does anybody disagree with Rashi's reading? I think most we've shown him are in agreement with Rashi. You can see here, for example, the Rashba, this long Rashba here. Just look what the Rashba here says in this one line. Ned, if you could just read this one line of the Rashba for us. So what's the underlying legal principle for why the middle guy is chayiv when the outside guy builds a perimeter of four walls? Yeah, so preventing the outside animals from coming in, what's the key legal word? What's that? Hana, right? Mehanho. The outside guy conferred a valuable benefit on the inside guy. So the Rashba is actually very explicit that mehanho is the underlying legal principle at work. I confer a benefit upon you, you have to pay for that benefit. Right? So the Rashba is pretty clear about that rule. Now, I think there's one Rishon who might be in disagreement. Anybody want to tell me who that Rishon might be before I pull it up? Kobe? Yeah, the Balamor. That's right. Mr. Balamor here, who you could tell incurred the wrath of the Ravid. Anybody see the private? If you thought I was snarky to Ned's friend by saying I'd take Amtrak, then you probably think the private was just straight out nasty, right? Here, just look at the private. Zeu tema gadol shein kamo. Right, the private says he's never seen like a more befuddling view. And then he even says over here, Sof davar harotza lamad al tochen hashmua yavo v'yismach al shali. If you want to know the right way to the sugya, come rely on my papers. So you can see he's really worked up about the Balamor. So Kobe, why do you think the Balamor disagrees with the Haggah in Rashi and the Rashba's interpretation of the sugya?
He talks about the Magus of God.
Yes. The Balamor seems to think that our sugya is a makom shenagu ligdor, so it's a bika, right? So a bika, I guess, some valley of fields where it's customary to build a fence, which means that the halachic mechayev, the halachic basis for demanding compensation here, is not based off on hana, but what's it based on? Yeah, either hezek ria directly or the custom. We don't really know what exactly the makom shenagu ligdor issue is. It might be that in a makom shenagu ligdor hezek ria shmei hezek, if it's customary to view that type of privacy invasion as a harm, then so shmei hezek, so there's a nezek basis to recover. Or that if it's makom shenagu ligdor, then you're just, everyone's obligated to go by the minhag. Right? The minhag itself might have normative force. And so that's the reason why you're have to pay for the wall, right? Could we give you either of those?
Maybe. He seems to really think it's a
okay. Well, let me say this then. So what's the issue with the Baal Amor? If you want to say it's straight up Hezek Ria, or at least, you know, this Mishnah on Dalet Amud Beis is the same as the Mishnah on Beis Amud Aleph. So it's kind of strange, like what's, like it's strange that you're not chayiv for the first three walls, right? Just like for Hezek Ria, there's an obligation to have a barrier, so you have to pay for each one. What's this thing about you're only chayiv when the fourth wall is built, right? So what's going on over there? So take us through the Baal Amor here. So Pirish, Kigon Shegadar Achitzon Shehu Amakev Beino Bein Apnimi Hanika. And here's the key phrase of Makom Shenagu Ligdar Bebika. So it's Makom Shenagu Ligdar. So let's call that Hezek Ria for now. And what we learn from here, Kobe. So you're not obligated to pay for a bika, the makom shenagu ligdar, until you surround all four sides, right? That's a really strange view, right? Nobody would say that for hezek ria proper. So what's his move? His move is to distinguish between a chatzer and a bika. In a chatzer, each wall is considered significant enough. It's, I guess, a chatzer is osoi litznius, he says. So that's why in a chatzer, each wall is cognizable in its own sense. Each wall could demand, each wall that's built is a basis for the other party to chip in. But bika is somehow less significant. He doesn't tell us why exactly. He says something about blah, blah, blah. Masha'in kein bika. Yesh harbe b'nei adam she'in makpidim listom k'neged rishis harabim. Seems like not everyone does makpid when it comes to their sados. Is that what he's saying, Kobe? So the idea seems to be that for Hezek Ria of a Chatzer, for Hezek Ria of a Bika, for a Sadeh, you could only collect from your neighbor when you have security on all four sides. That is idea. So why, if you're collecting on the basis of Hezek Ria, why do you need all four sides to be built first before you could submit your claim against the neighbor? So it's a strange thing, right? It's a strange thing that when it comes to a chatzer, so again, I'm just going to draw this thing over here. When it comes to a chatzer, you build a wall over here, that's a basis for collecting from your neighbor. This guy's got to pay. Suddenly, when it comes to a bika, there's no basis from collecting from your neighbor until you're surrounded on all four sides, right? So what does the Baal Amor want to say about that? Does he want to say that that's true for Hezek Ria proper? Because he says over here, which to my mind sounds like in a bika, you need to be surrounded on all four sides to collect. You guys agree with my reading of the Baal Amor? Josh Brockman does. Romy, you agree? Yeah. Rafi, you agree? Benji, you agree? Okay, so to my mind, that's kind of, it's a little forced that the Baltimore is saying this. Kobe, do you agree with that reading of the Baltimore?
The next game, you explained, like, maybe it's not true, maybe it's actually that you, like, talk together, like, put three walls, like, after the talk about it, maybe you would have to pay. It's only because you have these three walls up beforehand. It's like something you have to pay. So maybe when you do have to pay, doesn't mean.
I was very confused by what the Baltimore was doing in this line, where he appears to turn around and say, well, had you guys spoken about it before you built the wall? Everybody agrees to mechayven also. So what does that mean? Does that mean that you'd be five to pay for each wall as they went up? Or does he mean... So then in Abika, it's not true that in general you have to wait till all four walls are built before you could demand compensation? It's only when you do it without his rishas?
Yeah.
It's quite possible that's what he has in mind. I actually wasn't sure by what he's recanting in this line over here in the Baltimore. But yes, it seems to be that the Baltimore is saying something along the lines that for whatever reason, Hezekri and Abika, you got to get security on all four sides before you can collect. Maybe that's only in the case where you do it without consulting your neighbor in advance. When you consult him in advance, then he's high up the pitch, each wall goes up. That's a possibility here. What's important for our purposes right now, so he says over here, mitchila tavo ligdor imo, dekuli amo mordu de mechayven also. Ela lefisha hiktim hamakif, the gadar midas atzmo. It's because the makif got up and did it on his own without the knowledge or consent of the guy on the inside. That's why our Mishnah only requires that he chip in once he benefits from having the security on all four sides. Right, Kobe, that's how you're reading it? Okay, so that's just a very complicated and annoying way of saying for the Baltimore, what's the basis of collecting in our sugya, makif and nikaf, not hana, but rather hezekria, right? You're collecting for the hezekria, not because you conferred some benefit on him. Romy?
Why is that not hana? The same way you're like in the same rego, you're benefiting because you can bring benefit on him from protecting the rego. If you can bring benefit, then you're
protecting the hezekria. Yeah, I think the answer here appears to be that you have a chiyuv to be misalik hezekria in a makom shenagu ligdar. So you're really just satisfying your obligation not to be mazik him. That's where your chiyuv mamon comes in, rather than from conferring a valuable benefit upon him. See that?
Yeah.
So the way to think of the Ravid, the way to think of the Balamor is that the mechayiv on dalar mebeis is the same as the mechayiv on daf beis, right? Whatever the mechayiv for hezekria is, the halacha requires you to not harm him. So to here, you have a duty to not harm him. But the Baltimore has this quirky thing where you're only chayiv to chip in on this wall to remove hezekria if, in fact, you're getting rid of hezekria from all sides in a bika. Whereas in a chatzar, you're entitled to get rid of hezekria individually from each direction. So I think actually for the Baltimore, what's really fascinating about his view is that you could take this sugya out of the hana discussion. Whereas for all the other Rishonim, it's clearly about demanding compensation or having a duty to compensate for benefits that you receive. Ned?
I
was
saying correctly, it's about sort of you didn't have enough of this in the food, and that once you get the four walls,
say a little more about that.
I'm reading the last night in the plan here. So there is that after walking the ground, the rope probably put it high and stop the foot of the joint. So the thing that matters is the puppy doesn't matter then or not.
Yeah, I think he's just trying to explain why there's less privacy considerations in a bika than in a chatzer.
Once you set the four walls, you're going to not give those privacy considerations more.
Correct. Okay. Something along those lines. That's right. Okay, so are we in agreement about the Balamor? That the Balamor, so I think Kobe's right to say the Balamor takes the sugya out of Hana. Okay. So now we're going to come back to this whole debate here about exactly what the where the wall is being built. What I want to do right now is I want to say a little more about the basis of collecting mitam Hana. Did anybody get a chance to see the Ramban in our sugya, the Chiddushi Ramban? Tzachari, you saw it?
Yeah.
Okay, so just tell us a little bit about the Ramban, and then let me skip. I left the Ramban here at the end of the source sheets. Sorry about that. Okay, yeah. So on the bottom of page 12 right now, what's the Ramban worried about? Tzachari.
This is a bunch of example piece, but yes, I have a thing logical problem. Says, how could it be that the Muppet Chain of Number will live door? So, really that means that they can't preemptively force each other to face the wall. But after the fact, one of them just dumps ahead and builds the wall, you cannot beat him because, oh, it's Mahu Yilu, we're running the Tanasa. So, the whole point is when can neighbors force each other to face the walls? If the whole point of like our mitzvahs here are preserving that, then how is it valid for just someone who does kind of like the all expenses to then around it?
Exactly. So another way of thinking about this, which is what Zachary is saying, one way of thinking about the Ramban's objection is, what's the big deal about Hezekiah, whether you're chayav to build a wall or not chayav to build a wall? If either way, you could always build the wall and submit a bill under a theory of Hana. Right, so the Mishnah is going, Hezekiah Shmei Hezek, Lav Shmei Hezek, is it a Makam Shenagu? Is there a Takanas Chazal to build a wall? But all of that is over. That's an interesting question, but it's all beside the point. If you could just go ahead, build a wall between the properties, and then submit a bill to your neighbor claiming that you conferred a benefit upon him. Everybody see that? It's almost like the legal principle is overdetermined here. The principle of Hana should be sufficient to allow a neighbor to always reclaim part of the benefit he conferred. What did Chazal gain by the separate takana of Hezekria or the separate legal principle of Hezekria? Josh, you had a hand?
Yeah, no, I'm not really getting that. It's one wall versus four walls. So full reimbursement versus not full reimbursement.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, the full reimbursement versus the not full reimbursement point, right? I mean, you could see already in our Gemara, it's actually not clear how much you could recover from the neighbor under a theory of Hana, right? Yeah, that's a really good way of pushing back. You could think of the Ramban, I think the Ramban, ooh, Zolti has a hand. We're going to get Zolti's hand in 1 second. The Ramban could have made that point, I think, but he makes a different point, which gets at a similar conclusion. Yeah. But the Ramban's wondering what's the relationship between the Takana idea, the Chiyav Mitam Hezekria, and the Chiyav Mitam Hana. Zolti, you have a hand?
Yeah, I didn't read the Ramban side. Like, I don't know if he talks about this, but I was kind of curious. I mean, like, in the case of Hezekria, though, wouldn't you also be able, though, to make your neighbor or whatever, the guy, your shotik, to, like, split part of the property, the required property for the wall. Whereas in the case of Hana, if you just built the wall, it'd be totally on your side, and then you could just charge him, I guess, for it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So did everybody hear Daniel? So his point is that similar to Josh, you guys Chavrusas? Yeah, okay. Similar to Chavrusa Josh, there are other nafkamina between the Hezekiah Mechayev and the Hana Mechayev. And Zolti's telling us that a further nafkamina is the space of the wall itself, right? Under the takana, you could put 50% of the wall on your neighbor's property. Whereas under a theory of Hana, presumably you can only build it on your property and then demand compensation for the benefit you confer. Yeah, great point, Daniel. Thanks. So let's look at the Ramban. He says the following. So So if it's a makom shelo nagu ligdor, so you can't compel him ex ante lechatchila under the takana to build a wall. It's kind of strange that you can't force him to build a wall, but you could build a wall and then just force him to bear 50% of the costs. So Ramban answers, Lidi lo kasha. He says, this is like the sugya of Yored, which we'll talk about in a minute, which basically says what? What's the key point that the Ramban wants to make there in that sugya?
That the including and acting for work does, okay, does is behind it. However, it still is like a thought of this protest and say, I don't want this. And no matter how much actual deal or not is being granted, it's still not high.
Exactly. So the Ramban's Chiddush here, actually, which is not explicit anywhere in the Sigya, it's his own Chiddush, is that under a theory of conferring benefits, under a theory of Mahane, the recipient could always renounce the benefit in advance and resist liability. So let's say I'm neighbors with Ned, and I know that Ned had this scheme where he's always trying to confer benefits on my property. He's always mowing my lawn without my permission and then sending me a bill. He's always planting roses and other stuff in my garden and then sending me a bill. So I say, Ned, just like stop it. I hate greenery. I don't appreciate it. I don't benefit. I like when my lawn is overgrown. So stop it. If I do that, then I block any legal halachic claim that Ned has against me. Because the underlying halachic theory is that you're benefiting from the service he confers. But if in advance you tell him that this is not a benefit to me, I don't want you to confer it, so you could basically opt out of liability for those services. But under the theory of Hezekria, right, it doesn't depend on subjectively whether you're receiving a benefit. It's a categorical takana imposed by the Chachamim, in which case you're chayiv, even if you try to say, hey, I don't want to participate in your Hezekria offense. That's the Ramban's move. The Ramban's move is that Achiyav Mitam Hana is always defeatable, can always be defeated by an advanced macha, an advanced objection. Whereas the categorical Achiyav Mitam Hezekria can't be defeated by that. Sorry?
I think the Ramban's the Esha.
Yeah.
What's the
subject? Yeah, the Ramban here says, so if Ned had the courtesy to come over to me and say, hey, do you want me to mow your lawn? And I say no, Eino Rashai Ligaba, then Ned has no right to confer the benefit on me. The Efshar Sheino Chayav Lo Klum. You're right, the Ramban here says, like, oh, it's possible that I don't owe Ned anything. I think because the Ramban's the first one to articulate that an advanced machla works. So he puts it with a maybe. If you look at the Rashba, he drops that. I don't know if you notice that.
No, that's like a classic.
Yeah, yeah. So if you look at the later Rishonim, they quote the Ramban. I think this Ran quotes the Ramban here. Yeah. Here's where the Ran quotes the Ramban. And you could see, let's see. In Achanami de l'chadchila ein mechayven oso. So in the Ron's language, it's Hachanami de Pater, not like Efshar de Pater. So you can see, like, the later Rishonim drop that qualification. Yeah. But we'll talk, when we talk about the Machayiv of Hana, we could talk about why the Ramban might be specific about it. Yeah. Okay, so everybody good with that Ramban's distinction? The difference between whether the Mechayev is Mitam Hanar has a Griya? Yeah, great. Okay. Thoughts, comments? So far, so good? Yeah? Great. So now what I want to do is go a little deeper into the sugyos that establish the halachic rule of Hana. Our sugya may be one of them. It's like a chicken and the egg question. It's always hard to know which is the halachic Like, where is the halacha articulated for the first time? And which sigas are just applications of that principle? So today I want to look at a bunch of applications. Doesn't really matter which is the true source of it. But our sugya itself is one reasonable source for it, right? You confer the benefit of security by building these walls. The neighbor is chayav to pay. Okay, so let's start here with the sugya in Bava Metzia, Daf Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph. Sugya Biyorei, did anybody get a chance to prepare that sugya? Bava Metzia Kuf Aleph? Yeah? Okay, so Benji's going to just take us quickly through this Igmar case. What's going on here?
If I'm a girl, you're close to death on the girl. You're not touching the issue. I'm on a rug, Shalom, Yoda Al-Hakana. Shalomar, only the Kama Adam was a meeting inside of the hotel. Right? So if you go to someone else's field and you go to your plants without his permission, so Rob.
So this is like Ned's case, right? Ned comes to my property.
Goes along with plants. So Rob says that he has to pay you the absolute bare minimum amount that I think would be reasonable to pay.
Yeah, so actually see, Rashi here says he pays the lesser of either the benefit that the value of the benefit,
right,
or his actual costs. And so how much did Ned expend on buying the materials? And then you evaluate how much is my field now improved in value because of the benefit, and he pays the lesser of those two. Now, for our purposes today, we're not so interested in how much compensation you could recover. We'll talk about that. Even in our sugya makif anika, right, there's a whole range of views. But we're going to talk about that in the next year. For now, what's significant is that everybody seems to agree that the yored is entitled to be compensated, right? There's different views about how much he's entitled to be compensated, but he is entitled to be compensated, right? Yeah, exactly. You pay the going rate for this type of service. So I guess you just look around the market, how much people usually pay for a gardening job, and that's how much Ned gets paid, even though he wasn't contracted. Right?
Where you pay the lower amount of the added value or the wages is one where it's not normal to be planted. You know, or spot the yard, so it's planting wheat or whatever. But compensation, you know, assuming that, you know, if you had a wheat field that you're about to hire workers tomorrow, and it comes today and it doesn't, then you have to just pay the wages.
Exactly. So the amount that you're able to recover depends on the type of field it is, right? Was this field omade for this benefit or not omade for this benefit? And that's really a question for calculating the amount of compensation, not the entitlement to be paid per se. Right, Benji, you agree?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Then there's one other little nugget to take out of here. We'll just look at it now since we're looking at the city, but it's really important for the question of the rate of compensation. The Gemara tells this little story, right? A person came before Rav. Seems like he had conferred a benefit on somebody else. So let's say Ned conferred a benefit on my property. Rav says, Yil Shumle, go evaluate how much the benefit is worth and pay Ned. So I say, Lobaina, but I don't like the benefit that he conferred upon me, right? So Amar Le, so what did Rav say?
Zil Shumle, we got that all tossed him up. Amar Le, Lobaina. He said, okay, fine, so I'm just paying the lesser value.
Right, meaning you don't like the benefit, so you still got to pay him a little bit, just so you don't pay him the high market rate, you pay him the lowest amount. Exactly. L'sof chazi de gidra v'kam interle, right? So if you watch Karate Kid, right, you know, you spend a lot of time caring for those little plant links. You know, I'm talking about? What?
Bonsai?
Yes. Gebekias. So sure enough, you know, Ned plants those things in my yard and I'm like tending to them very meticulously and taking good care of them. And so, Ned comes before Rav and he says, wait a second. Look, Rosenzweig's taking really good care of those things, right?
We did not take the diesel. Really does that.
Yeah, so Zil Shimle V'yadol Hal Yona. Right, now you got to pay the top, like the highest market rate for those things, because now we know that you really like it. So what's striking to me in this idea, or you guys can tell me what's striking to you, maybe it's the same thing, We're interested downstream in trying to figure out what's the underlying reason why you're chayav to pay when you receive a benefit. In the sugya itself, there seems to be two different rationales, right? One is just the brute fact that you received a benefit. And then it's, you know, okay, is it an omei lita or a omei lita, right? Was the field ready for this or not ready for this? But this key, this line here really speaks to a different principle. What's the key line there in your view, Benji?
But this is the, you know, hana.
I don't see hana here.
Like, I guess not hana, but like personal.
How do you translate Galisa Daite Dinihalasa?
You showed that you view this in a, that you would actually like this.
Exactly.
This is good for you.
So there are different ways of interpreting that. Your interpretation leans more into now we know that you benefited. It's like now epistemically, we have reason to believe that you in fact benefited. It's like you lied when you told Ned that you don't like the things he planted. Now we know that you do like them. I think you could read this a little differently. If you think about this almost in like contractual terms, the whole problem with Hana is that it wasn't a contracted for service. Right, you didn't request the service, there's no contract, there's no agreement. But if ex post facto, right, you show that you in fact did want the service, so then we could almost impute a contractual basis after the fact, right? Meaning the thing that gives us, the thing that would explain why I'm not obligated to pay Ned is because I didn't contract his services. He came, he trespassed, he did it on his own. But if after the fact I say, oh, Ned, thank you so much. I was going to hire the landscaper to do that anyway, and you saved me the headache. So, nichalecha, or gilui das, would be the key words here, might say, well, we actually know that we could almost like zachan ladam shalom b'fanav type of idea, right? Where we ex post facto say, you wanted to hire him. To me, that's significant because when we're trying to figure out the mechayev in these cases where you're paying for a service that you didn't solicit, is it the brute fact that you benefited, or is it some sort of imputing of a contractual principle that we know deep down that you would have wanted the service, or that you did want it, you just didn't articulate that you wanted it. See the difference between those two?
I agree with you that the phrase in the Sugya B'Mitzvah Kevalev, the Lisa Daite Dinichalecha, is ambiguous, right? I agree that that phrase could go both ways.
Is it just the mechayev that you benefited, and we just need knowledge that you benefited, which is your way of reading it, right? Or is it the way I'm suggesting as an alternative, that it's we now have a giloy das that you wanted the service, which is a type of ratification, right?
I have to give the price also. I want to say that it's as if you're ratifying the contract.
Right. Yeah, right. So we'll talk about how the price thing bears on this. Exactly. But you see the two readings, I agree that it could go either way. Yeah, let me just flesh that out a little bit. I'll take some hands here. You see, imagine the case in a hypothetical world where, let's say I had COVID, and then I go on a bike ride, and you find me collapsed along the Schuylkill River. So you call an ambulance, right? And the ambulance scrapes me off the ground and they take me to Penn Medicine. Penn Medicine revives me. And then they send me an exorbitant bill for the ambulance service, right? So you say, wait a second, you can't charge me. I never hired your service. I didn't call the ambulance. I never hired your service, right? There's actually an interesting case law about this, right? Could the ambulance charge for the service they were never contracted for, right? So again, there are two theories here. One is you benefited from our service, right? We got you back alive, right? So we conferred a valuable benefit, pay up now. That would be like a chiyuv mitam hana. The other theory is to say, well, you were incapacitated. we all know that were you perfectly conscious and rational, you would have called us and hired our services. So the reason why you have to pay is because there's like a quasi contract, right? You may not have articulated your side of the agreement, but we all know that you would have wanted to. You see how those are two, so those are the, I think, are the two different ways of thinking about these sigils. You at least have that gift to me, halakha, you're telling us, Benji, you go either way, right? Whether that's now we know that you benefited versus imputing that you would have wanted this contract. Yeah. Josh, you have a hand?
Yeah.
And then this, Josh.
Given that in this case, you're saying no money, right? It is articulated, it doesn't.
So he says, right? But then you see him tending to them, to the plant so delicately. So you say, wait a second. Seems like he likes these guys now.
You're going back to the meeting.
It's like I tell the ambulance, like, you guys revived me. You should have left me for the dead. Like, don't you know? Like, I hate paying the bills every month. Right? You should have just left me where I was.
You're collapsing, and then.
And then a month later, I'm out biking again, right? And I say, oh, so great to be alive. So then they send a bill, and they say, what? You know, you're a motor. You want to be alive.
There's a difference in happening collapse and the ambulance coming. You know, they start bringing you in the ambulance and you say, don't touch me. Like, you know, get away from me. I'm fine. It's a different story. You know, everyone, you know, you could say the same thing. You know, deep down, you actually have
right. Well, I guess the analogy then would be, you know, they're scraping me off the ground and I say, leave me where I am. Like, don't touch me. And then, you know, 2 months later, I throw like a sudas hoda thinking like the ambulance workers who revived me. Right? So, you at least I died after the meal. You know?
Yeah, I get it. It sounds to me like more of a change of heart, like kind of what Benji said, but.
All right, as opposed to now we know what your true intentions were all along. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. We're gonna get deeper into these questions. Not so much deeper, but. What we get from this Gemara about Yored actually is three things for our purposes right now. So, number one, it's a clear source for this principle. You're chayav to pay when you receive benefit. If somebody trespasses and plants stuff, you're chayav to pay. Number two, you see there's a wide debate about the rate of compensation, which depends on all these factors, right? Is it a sada suyalita? Is it sada sheina suyalita? And then number three, this conceptual question about the basis of collecting, the basis of liability. Is it a gilui das, which we'll just call for now a quasi-contractual principle that we know you would have agreed or you wanted to agree to the terms, or is it the fact of your receiving hana? And of course, the fact of your receiving hana, we'll have to inquire why that itself should be a basis for liability. Josh Brofman, do you have a hand on this?
Yeah, I was just going to ask about Zuffin. Normally for Zuffin to work, it has to be purely positive, right? Like,
yeah.
Not allowed to be any.
That's because Gomer, there's a whole discussion about that.
Because in this case, if you want to say that, like, the contract is.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to say that this is exactly Zuffin. I was using Zuffin as an analogy where we say, you know, it's like an artificial minoi shlifos. So to hear, it's like an artificial imputing of contractual intent. Yeah. Great. So we'll come back to that sugya to discuss the rates of compensation. For now, what's the importance for us is just to establish the basis of liability. Romy, you have a hand on this?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how you get the contractual intent if you didn't. There's nothing that suggests you would need to deal with your rate. Meaning, maybe I'm thinking, oh wow, that would be my deal. And like, it's a nice thing, but it's a gift. So I agree to that. You know, I like that. So if it's a contractual intent, like, you know, you're trying to get that contractual intent, then
it's interesting.
You have to assume that he's really seeing it as, like, he would never have confused that purchase, like, come and do it to be nice.
Right. So you're saying, I guess you're in agreement with Benji, that you'd rather read Gelisa Daita de Nichalach as, we know you're benefiting, rather than, you're saying it's too much of a stretch to say, turning the clock back, we know you really wanted the service at the time.
Because who said it was a service? Who said it was like a service in the sense that, like, you hired somebody to do it?
Now you're just happy that you got it.
As opposed to just, like, yeah.
That you had received it. Ned, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah. If that would be the case, then I would say that what's the connection on the personal but I want this one, I want this, because I want this. Yeah, you have, then you have to get an opportunity to open the thought and a big word scene. If there is an opportunity for the thought, then that makes sense. But here, I think
there is opportunity. Here, there is opportunity, there isn't.
It would make more sense if there was opportunity to open the thought, and the access to the thought is therefore a sort of somehow legitimizes the presence of the person with it. Here, what I think it is more like, in general, this is a service that people would like to benefit from. And therefore, they're going to say this is a service that you would also like to benefit from. That's something to do with the specific interaction between the person who's entering the field and also.
Yeah, it's the fact that this is the type of service
yeah.
that he wanted.
Right.
And you think that's consistent with the quasi-contractual
right.
way of looking at it. Yeah. Yeah, I tend to agree with that. Pushing back on your point, Romy.
You know, that's just saying, Ned, you don't see your point again about the underlying point. I'm saying it's not that we're saying that in a particular case, you have a person who wants a specific service vendor or not. It's that we have certain services that we know that people would like to have performed on their behalf. And that's not subject to any specific service.
Yeah, so it's like it's basically establishing a lower threshold for what would constitute like quasi-contractual DAS. I mean, once we know that it's the type of service that you would have wanted anyway, then it's like we already have DAS from one party to receive it. That's the way you're putting it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that has no bound really.
Yeah, but it's a different conceptual idea from the notion that, look, you benefited, you have to pay for everything you benefit from. We'll talk more about this, but see, what I'm trying to get at with these two different conceptual bases is we all know what a contract is. That's a very known legal principle. So to use that paradigm to explain these cases of Hana is conceptually elegant. Right, or we don't have to create new legal principles. If, however, you think that it's the fact that we benefited itself that makes you liable, so then you already get into Josh's discomfort, which is like, wait a second, I don't like it. What
that the Hana side actually less like has fewer down.
Correct. Right, I mean. Especially, how are we defining Hana? Objectively or subjectively, right? So, and also it's a sui Hana, like we don't know what the underlying legal principle there would be. We might say it's a type of unjust enrichment, right? It's unjust for you to be the beneficiary of a service without paying for it. Some people think this way. Like some people think like, why do you have to pay taxes? Oh, because it would be unjust for you to benefit from the protection and the benefit that the government gives you without paying your fair share, right? Some people, there's like so much philosophical literature on this type of issue, right? so maybe that's the idea, right? Or maybe there's something else. Maybe there's just like, it's a kind of theft, right? To have somebody else's like work benefiting you. I guess that's similar to just enrichment, but along those lines, right? Hey, Don. Wait, speak up.
I forgot.
What? Can't forget? Actually?
Yeah.
Okay, so you rescind your comment for that?
Yeah.
Okay, if it comes back to you, tell us what it was. All right. Cool, let me just check on these guys. Guys on Zoom, how are you doing? Good, Ariel's giving us the thumbs up. Shmuel, did you mute us because you're...
Oh,
really? That's crazy. So he's going to be in quarantine now for like a month with him drilling over his head. That's hot. That's pretty bad. Shmuel, good luck with the drilling over there. He's smiling. So, Eitan, Jocelyn, you're okay? Good. Zolti, good. All right, Ariel. Ariel, you're just on Zoom for fun still?
No, I got some texts from people. I got a little worried, so I'm waiting for more results.
Got it. I have an abundance of caution, right?
They just sent an email. There's 49 positive cases on Wolf.
Holy moly. 49 positive cases on Wolf. Just on Wolf. Yeah. That's crazy. I don't know. I think 49 cases is a lot. And that's just since Yontif, right? Oh, since yesterday?
That's from Monday's tests.
Was that Ariel?
That's from yesterday's tests.
That's wild. Wow. And I thought cases were going down in the country, no? Isn't that everyone's thing?
Well, yeah, they are. They were.
Right, they were. That's wild. Wow. All right, Kobe.
I just wanted to point out this idea back in there simply that it's maybe a little different because here the only person getting our knot is the guy who's fielded it. The guy who plants. But in our case, when you build the wall, it's really getting our knot for both people.
Yeah, so it's bilateral. But why is the guy on the inside have to pay? Only because of his hanah that he's receiving. I mean, the machayev for the guy on the inside is the fact of his hanah.
But, I mean,
saying
if you want to hold these cases as hanah, just point out the case a little different. Maybe that's what the Baal Mahon wants to say, but maybe that's what the Baal Mahon doesn't want to talk about.
Oh, in our sake, yeah. That's interesting. That's a very interesting idea. Come back to that when we, yeah. Bring that point up again when we get into discussions about what type of hanah, yeah, is enough to trigger achiyah. So I want to just drag your attention on this distinction about nichale gilei das versus the fact of hanah. So notice that the Rashba that we read, I'm just going to come back to this Rashba here, so you can see the Rashba said that the basis for liability in the sugya of makif and nikaf. Let's see if I could pull this up again. Yeah. So the Rashba on Daf Dalet said, Ezra, you want to read this just line in the Rashba here? Do you get this? Im Gidra, Midalad Rukhosa. Just read this one line here. So what's the key word here again for the Rashba? Why is the inside guy chayav to pay? Because he gets protection and mehanho, right? He gets hanah, he gets benefit. There is a view in our sugya, depending exactly on how you read the Mishnah, that maybe it's only if the nikaf gets up and is goder the revius that he's chayiv, right? Depends exactly how you read this machlokas amrayim, which we'll get to. So what does Rashi say? Imama nikaf v'goder ser revius. There's Rashi in Bava Kama. Why is the inside guy chayiv in the case with Amma nikaf, Josh Brafman? Yeah, Goliath, daite de nichale, right? So it's not just a fact. So in the sugya, so remember we have this distinction in Amad Makin versus Amad Mika. This may be familiar to you guys. So in terms of Hana, it should be equal, right? The inside guy gets equal benefit when the Makif builds the wall and when he builds the last wall. Rashi Bokhamir says that the significance of Amad Nikaf is that now we have Galia Daitin. So if you read that as a quasi-contractual principle, that makes a lot of sense, right? Because it's almost like we have his consent to the service now, which is what makes him liable, rather than we know that he benefited in some way. Right, so you could really explain nicely if you think that Galia Daite de Nichale is its own legal principle, whereas on Benji's reading of the Sugya and Bamitzia Kavalev, really all Galia Daite would be doing is in raising the level of compensation. Right? Oh, we know that you really liked it, so you got a lot of Hana, so you pay a higher amount. if you think that you need aman nika to get the chiyuv off the ground, as some of these sugyas suggest, not all of them, then it makes more sense to say that galya daite is a separate legal principle of consent and quasi-contract. Everybody agree with that analysis? Rashi also uses that, I think, in our sugya. So you can see Rashi in Dalet and Beis, and the Goblin of Esna Kol. Although here it's for the amount. The Kivin de Gadar Satzada Pasuach, Goli Daite de Michale Vimai de Gadar Chabre. So you notice that Rashi uses that phrase, Goli Daite, as opposed to the phrase of Mahana. Okay, thoughts, comments? Everyone good so far? Yeah? Great. So now let's look at the other Sigya. So we saw our Sigya, basic analysis of our Sigya. We saw the sugya of Yoreid and Bamitzia Kuf Aleph. What I want to do now is just breeze through some Rishonim that apply this principle to other sugyas. How many of you are familiar with this concept of Mahana in general? Many of you have come across it separately? Not so many. A little bit. So it's one of those principles where it turns up, it's everywhere once you start looking for it. So who got a chance to see the Chit Rashba and Zion Simeon Tafkuf Tez Zion? Anybody? Yeah, Romy, tell us about that Chit Rashba. What's going on there?
So basically, some of you can send me up the sun, and he basically says that it's like somebody comes all the way, and he wants to reimburse the guy.
So again, the rate of compensation we'll talk about a little more separately. But yeah, so you have a father who travels, he's abroad, he leaves his children behind, somebody else comes along and teaches the kids, actually not clear if it's Torah here, or just teaches them, gives them an education. So the father is obligated to reimburse that guy. And which sugya is the Rashba quote? Yeah, sugya Yoreid, right? He says it's like a sadah suyalita. That's clearly a reference to Bamitzia Kavala, which suggests that for the Rashba, that's the paradigmatic sugya. Right? So you get a really interesting application here to a teacher. This gets paskin as one day in the Shulchan Aruch Siman Shin Lamed Hey. Hamalamed in Ben Chaveru Shalomi Dasa Av, Yoshi Omrim Dechai Bashalim Lokadina Yorid and Tokhsada Shal Chaveru Shalom Bershus. So, if anybody wants to make a little extra cash, you pull a kid over in Shul, give him a little Dvar Torah, and then send the parents a bill after Shabbos. Conferred a benefit upon you, Okay, so the Mordechai also has this. The Mordechai in Resh Mem Zion, sorry, in Siman Shin Mem Vav. So Maram was asked, Malamed Shamar Lo Balabayis Lamod Bini Velo Nadar Lo Shum Davar. This is actually a slightly different case. Anybody see this Mordechai case? A father tells a Malamed, teach my child, but doesn't specify the amount of the contract. This happens. This is like Maisim B'chol Yom, right? So the Maram answered, you got to pay him, right? Don't think that because you didn't specify a price that you're off the hook. And he says, so you got to pay him the going market rate. So just look to see what people normally pay for this type of service. And he says, v'nirli taima dilogara miyorid l'tof sada chaver shalo bershos. Right, if you're chayiv to pay somebody for teaching your child and conferring a benefit without having asked him to do it. So all the more so, that's the logara, you're going to be chayiv to pay them if you ask them to do that, but don't specify the rate. Josh?
I would also say that the logara can be that kind of like the balamor of Nezagriya. I mean, you have a chayiv to teach your son first. So there's that halakhic chayiv that already exists. Huh?
That's interesting.
As opposed to like planting a tree where there's not a halakhic chayiv.
Right. You're saying the benefit you receive from Talmud Torah is not weaker than that.
Yeah, or and because you have to be a person on Torah, you have to.
Yeah, that's good. That's nice. That's a nice way of reading it. I prefer my reading just because I think it's not a perfect Euroweek case. A perfect Euroweek case is where it's unsolicited. Here it was solicited, just there was no agreement on the price. So I think that's why the Logara comes on, but I hear your reading also. Okay, thoughts on this Talmud Torah example? It's very nice, in my opinion, very nice example. Sorry, you have thoughts on this, sir?
I'm trying to remember what the second hypothetical was. I ain't got here. What did you say about the Rashi?
Oh, it says it here? What did Jack here say?
Yeah.
That's great. We'll talk about that. That was about Asielita and Asielita. We'll talk about that when we talk about the rate of compensation. Good. Ned, do you have a hand on this?
The idea that
no derhana.
I don't want to.
That's not what's going on here. Yeah.
But in such a case, would that suffice to contractual?
Interesting.
Right.
Right. We know that you don't want hana.
Yeah.
That might be similar to what the Ramban calls a macha, right? When the Ramban says that if it's a Yorid principle, you could always be mocha in advance, right? So I wonder if saying, yeah, moder hana from Ned, is that the same as saying, Ned, don't confer any benefits on me? Arguably, yes, right? Good. Okay, let's look at another principle where this idea of hana comes up. So again, this is, I think, the more traction we have on the applications, the more we'll be empowered to get at the basis of this halachic principle of just having a duty to pay when you receive a benefit. So the Gemara B'Metzia Ayin Vav Med Aleph. This is an Asokar Sa'umnim. So tricky case, but the Gemara quotes a brisa here, which says the following. Anybody get a chance to prepare this case? Ayin Vav, Romy? Yeah? So go for it.
The pepper?
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody, you basically hire somebody to work in the field and you point them off the other thing like that, and they do work, then you're responsible for paying in, and then you can collect from the ball what he's going to serve.
Exactly. So, what's important for our purposes?
That you can find a ball.
Yeah, exactly. So Zachariah hires me to do work for him for the day. So he hires me for his lawn mowing service. And he says, go mow Ezra's lawn. So I go and I mow Ezra's lawn. So Zachariah has a contractual obligation to pay me whatever rate he agreed. But then Zachariah could go and recover the benefit from Ezra, because Ezra received the benefit of my service. So Zachariah is liable to me, but Ezra is liable to Zachariah. Now, there could be a different rate, right? So if Zachariah got a good deal from me, so he's paying me $4, but he could recover $5 from Ezra, if that's what the benefits were, whatever it might be, right? Well, alternatively, maybe Zachariah is very generous. He's paying me $5, and he's only going to recover $4 of benefit from Ezra. The point is that there are two separate legal principles at work here. There's the contract between the employer and the employee. That's between them. But then there's the principle of chozer v'notel mibal habayis ma she'eneyu, that Zachariah could recover from the third party the benefit that he conferred on that third party. Okay? And you can see Rashi here is quite explicit. The Hakatani Yotan Balabais Mashahena also Biafa Pishalot Sivahu, even though Ezra didn't solicit Zachariah's services, Bahare Hene also Bekah. It's sufficient that Zachariah conferred the benefit on Ezra to recover. So actually, this tucked away Brysa and Bab Mitziyain Vav is another application of Hana. Okay, so Sugya number 4. I'm counting Makif and Nikaf as number 1. Counting your rate as number 2, Chinuch, the Malamed case, as number 3. So number 4 is the Sugya B'Metzia Lamed Amed Beis. this idea of Mesh Aveda. Anybody, Kobe, you saw that one? Okay, so tell us what's going on in the Mesh Aveda case. Yeah, so also like a type of service, right? So I'm helping you find your lost item, I incur some financial losses. Helping you find your lost item, I can recover some of that. Right?
And so he said, I should, you should pay everything that Miss Sara made, you call up money that you made. He said, no, you don't do that. You have to pay anything, like, whatever. As soon as you just did the thing, you're like, I don't want
to. Exactly. So this is the question of the rate of compensation. The Mishnah seems to say that it's not a very high rate. It's not your opportunity cost. It's the going rate for similar types of services, right? Or the going rate for a menial worker. So, but why are you entitled to be compensated? So you can see the Ramban here has this objection on Daf Lamed Beis and Bava Metzia. Why do you have to pay him at all? This is like Mavriya Chari. I don't want to get into Mavriya Chari, but the idea that Mark says, if you fend off a line from someone's property, you're not able to collect. So whatever, why are you able to collect here? So the important thing for our purposes is the Li Nira.
The
dummy.
The dummy. It's like someone who does work for a grant.
Which is the Gemara in Bava Metzia in Vav, which we just read, right? The case where Zachariah confers a benefit on Ezra. So the Ramban says that, look, when you gain from somebody else's service, that's as if you actually make money off them. Schar pe'ula mamona demati liyade debalavedehu. So when you receive the benefit of this guy finding your lost object, it's as if the guy put cash in your bank account. Right, the value of the service. And that's why he's able to recover something from you, because he confers a benefit upon you by providing you with that valuable service. Make sense? Yeah. So the Ramban's pretty clear about that. The Rashba has the same theory on Lamed Aleph and Bava Metzia. He quotes the Ramban. And similar, he just throws in the word. He says, V'dami l'poel sh'asam l'ach b'shal chaver d'no sein lo. Same legal principle as you're able to recover for the hana that you confer upon somebody else. The Shulchan Aruch, this will just be the fifth sugya where this comes up. It's an extension of this Mesh Aveda case, helping your friend recover a lost item. Yeah, the Shulchan Aruch embraced Samech Dalid, which is Hilchos Avedo Metzia. And he says, somebody want to read this pretty broad quote from the Shulchan Aruch? Ned, you want to take us through it? V'chein kol adam. So what's going on here? So kol adam shehusim chaver bulo tova.
Can't
say, the friend can't say that pretty broad legal principle, no? Every time you go and help your friend move something, you know, you go to the store, you pick up some pizza for your friend, right? So the Ron's formulation here is, anytime you do a service or a favor for your friend, the friend can tell you that there's a presumption that you did it for free since I didn't command you to do it. No. You got to pay out the guys. You got to pay the guy for doing it. Well, yeah, what happened to Chesed over here? Chesed for the right dollar amount. That's the answer. This is like just such a broadly formulated principle, right? General presumption that anytime you confer a benefit on somebody, you're entitled to be remunerated. So, you guys have thoughts on that broad formulation? I think in America, we would assume the opposite probably, right? We would assume unless you have a contract, there's no basis to be compensated. Here in Shulchan Aruch, you seem to get the opposite formulation, right? Unless we know that you didn't benefit, or unless we know that it was intended to be a free, a pro bono favor, presumptively you're entitled to be paid. Sorry, you have a...
That's just like the non-Americans, more contentious and
right.
Getting involved with us.
Leave us alone unless you're...
It's always been implicit macha.
Right. Yeah, it's always an interesting question. How fundamental is that disagreement? Right? But I think this formulation really brings home like the breadth or the scope of application of the principle, right? You know, it's like an interesting to say, okay, so it's like a tucked away or locked up somewhere without much application. And then once you see this bronze formulation, you're like, whoa, I'm going to start suing everybody for everything, right? Josh, do you have a hand on this? I hope you pay your golf, your caddy. Do you have a caddy who like schleps your stuff around?
He loves caddy.
He's just so happy to do it.
I think it's still pretty outrageous. I don't think it's as broad and horizontal as that, but it's only when you specifically don't ask for it. So all of those cases, that's a very important part. That stuff can be done because you are.
You're saying it's dafka when like whole of a lot of sicha type things.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, if I just come and shovel your walk for you, then
I can't say anything. I have to pay.
Right. But if you ask me to do it and I say sure, yeah. I'm saying there the presumption is free. It's a little counterintuitive.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Josh, tell us why it doesn't make sense.
It should be the opposite. It should be that if you tell them to do it now that you're like, the other guy's only doing it because he told them, that's more like a contract. That's less like he's doing it for free.
Yeah.
No, my point is more that you could ask the favors. There exists such a concept.
But I think what's significant is not the fact that you ask, it's the fact that it's pitched as a favor. Right? Like, hey, could you do me a favor and shovel my walk for free? Like, I think you'd have to contract in the freeness of it.
Yeah,
I like that. Right. That's an odd. Okay, so let's look at a few more cases. Let's say one's just bored of the cases, but I think the cases help us a little bit. Yeah. Okay, you guys bored of the cases, or does it help?
Well, I don't think most of us got
them. That's okay. You'll see them now. We'll walk you. I'll think I see them slowly. Unless like you can't grasp them, if you can see them in advance. We're doing it together. It's Harbusa shot. So let's look at a few more cases. Just because the cases, you don't really need to look through the Harbusa time. Actually, maybe you should. You just look over there. Okay. So let's look at a few more cases. So Chivas Arashba, Chelik Dalet, Simon Kufkaf Hey. So, the referral scheme. Tell us about the referral scheme, Zacharia.
Practice where a guy would kind of bring people to someone else's store and bought things. They ever started like demanding from the store owner that hey, brought you all these customers.
That was the minimum. The minimum was to get kickbacks for a referral.
Right.
Exactly. So Shalta, Ruben, Hevi, Kutim, Olava, Bechanusa, Shalshima. So I think you have to imagine here, like you're in a little Barcelona, let's say, which is like a tight-knit Jewish community, or at least where the Jewish stores are. And like the Goyim didn't wander into the Jewish store areas. But Reuven had connections with the non-Jews, so he brought his non-Jewish friends into like the Jewish stores. That was like a big deal, right? Because you're expanding the market, right? So Reuven hevi kutim olavav l'chanusa shal shimon. The konumi met of the gadim, and now Reuven sues Shimon that he should get a cut of the purchase. Shekein minhag balei chanuyos litein schar mevi hakonim b'chanusa. It was customary to pay somebody a commission if they brought new customers to your store. I think it's all very reasonable, right? But there's no contract here, right? There's no contractual agreement that you'll get a commission. It was just customary. Shimon responds, so Shimon, the store owner, Heshiv Sheino Chai Beklum, Lefishalo Hisnelo Klum. Shimon says, hey, I never agreed to this. I never agreed to pay him a commission. So I'm not liable. Very nice machlokas, right? It's a very clean legal case. So is he liable or not? The Rashba sides with Reuven. We'll see exactly. He says one thing that's interesting for a different sugya. And then he says, V'od ma bein yored l'toch sadeh chaver shelo b'rshus v'nata v'hishbicha l'yored l'chanuso v'hishbiach mekcho v'imokom shenogu l'itein tzchar al zeh. If I could walk into your field and improve it and collect, so I can walk into your store and improve it. Oh, sorry, that it's. I can walk into your field and improve it and collect for the service. I can.
All right,
I tried. So you see, the Rashba here appeals to the principle of Yored to say that the guy who brings in the customers is entitled to a commission for conferring that benefit. That makes sense? Yeah. So again, you just have like another application of this principle in this case. Likewise, and these are the types of cases that come up in Beis Din all the time. People suing, sorry.
English flippers?
The realtors. Right.
No, the flippers.
I know, it's a flipper case. Yeah. Should I tell that story or? It's a good story.
Maybe not.
Wait, yeah. So first let's get the legal principle down. So this is a case of a star store. A star store is like a broker. So a broker is like somebody who, yeah, really like a realtor. They connect the buyer and the seller. I guess what a realtor is, right? So if they provide a service, they're entitled to get remunerated. So you can see here, Shulchan Aruch just talks about Reuven was going to sell a house. This is the Shulchan Aruch and Simon Kuf Pei Hei. Shimon comes along and tells him about Levi, who's going to buy it. But then Reuven says, I hate Levi. I'll never, ever sell to him. And then surprise, surprise, later Reuven ends up selling it to Levi. Right? It was just a ploy to cut out the middleman, the broker, right? Which is what everyone tries to do, because why should you pay an extra 3% to your broker, right? So once the broker finds the guy, you try to cut him out. So Shulchan Aruch says, you're chayav to pay Shimon for the brokerage fee. What's the basis for this compensation? Why you have to pay him? So the Gra here says, Pirish Haram, he's signed the Maram Nuremberg, Taima desarsur notal schar, afa pishalo sholcho, vasarsur bameyatma, you have to pay even though you didn't solicit the guy's services. Why? What's the basis? So let's say you're a buyer, right? And a realtor just calls you up and says, I have a great house for you. So why do you have to pay? So what's the Gruz, what does he cite? Yored. Kamo Yored l'sad ha'chaver v'nata. And a sarsur, kivan shu also a limkor, it's like a sada asuya lita. So the Gruz is explicitly connects Yored to paying for the service of the brokerage, which seems to be like some sort of benefit, the receipt of benefit type theory. The Gra in Simin Kuf Pei Hei Sifatim Yud Gimel. So I think that's the same Simin there. Yeah, sorry. In Simin Pei Zion, Sifatim Kuf Yud Zion, extends this also to Shadchanim. So the Shadchan calls you up and starts nagging you about a Shidduch. And you just end up saying, okay, fine, I'll go out with the person. And then ultimately you get engaged. And then the Shadchan sues you to get his or her cut. So believe it or not, the theory here seems to be that the Shadchan's entitled to that cut, assuming they confer a valuable service. The Gra here says that a Shadchan has the same din as a broker, right, or the realtor. because same theory, it's like Yorito Sada Havera and Sada Sialita, everybody's looking to get these types of services to benefit. So you're obligated to pay.
You get divorced to get the money back?
No, it's actually settled halachic doctrine that once the couple gets engaged, you're entitled to the commission. Yeah, so even if they get engaged and broken up, like the service is to get them to the engagement. Yeah, people have thought of this already. You know, that's what the service is. Okay, one last sugya that I want to just draw to your attention here, and this will set us in a clear path to go deeper into our sugya, is the sugya in Bava Kamma Kufi, sugya in Bava Kamma Yud Tes on the days until Daf Kaf. Anybody remember what's going on there? So Shane Baregel versus Saravin. You're familiar with that issue. Shane Baregel versus Saravin is type of Zikin. If an animal eats food in Rosh Saravin, so the animal's potter, the owner's potter. Yomi Chaya for Shane Baregel versus Sayachet. If the animal eats food in private property. Does sound familiar? Yes? So you're putter from the Zikin, but the Menis and Shalemis Nashanemis. The animal's still high to pay. The owner's still high to pay for the Hanah that the animal got from eating the food in versus Rabin. So there's no tort based liability for Shane Baregel versus Rabin, but there is Hanah based liability. And there's a difference, right? Because you don't pay for the value of the meat that was damaged. You really just pay for the amount of Hanah, meaning, were that meat just weighed in dog food, like what would be valued as like dog food for per pound, right? What would the value be? Something like that. Okay, so that's another important extension of this idea of mitam hanah. There it seems to be the animal benefited, but even though you're not chayav for the harm it caused, you're liable for the benefit you received from it. Okay, so that's just like my survey of all these disparate cases of chiyav mitam hana. What we want to pick up with on in Thursday is to look closely at our sugya now with this background, chiyav mitam hana, and figure out how this principle gets applied to our case, amakef and nikaf. So both in terms of the structure of the case, where is the wall being built, and what type of benefit is being conferred. Furthermore, and most importantly, what is the rate of compensation? Like, what is it that the nikah is chayev to pay for? So that's going to connect to the sugya in Yored about the rate of compensation. So what does the rate of compensation show in our sugya? And then related to that, can any of these halachos shed light on what the underlying mechayev of hana is? Meaning, is it the quasi-contract, Nichale type principle, or is it closer to something like unjust enrichment, that it's wrong for the guy on the inside to benefit from the property of the guy on the outside? All right. So really, we're just going to focus on Makif and Nikaf applications of this principle. And I will send out on the WhatsApp exactly which pages I want us to focus on for the next year. All right. Shkaf, guys. Guys on the Zoom, thanks for joining. Feel free to talk up more. Zulti, that was good how you raised your hand and spoke up, but the rest of you should also feel free to scream out or something.
Thank you.
All right, we'll see you later.